You would think that because there are 10 commandments, we would only have 10 classes, right? But there's an introductory lesson that we're going to do tonight. I mean, before we talk about God's law, we need to talk about why His people needed a law and what that law, even though it's 3,400 years old, what it means, what it potentially means for us. And when we finally get to the final lesson, we'll be talking about how Jesus wraps all that up for us. Before we talk about the law itself, when you think about how God has unfolded or unveiled His plan for His people throughout history. And so in order to do that, we'll start with Abraham. Go to Genesis chapter 12. Genesis chapter 12. Now we know that God gave the Israelites the law, the Ten Commandments, and all the rest of the law when they were in the wilderness, and He gave them the bulk of it at the Mount Sinai. But long before then, God had prepared His people to be just that, to be His people. He called Abraham and told him he was going to take a trip. He was going to leave his home here in Ur, and he would take this roundabout trip to get to the land that God said it was going to be the inheritance of all his descendants. Now, remember when Abraham first heard from God, he was about 75 years old, childless. His wife, a little younger than he was still no spring chicken, you know, and she had the response, or she was also given the promise that she was going to bear a child. So there's a lot that Abraham is hanging on to, and it comes from the promises of God. In Genesis chapter 12, if you're there, it says in verse 1, "Now Yahweh said to Abram, go forth from your country and from your relatives and from your father's house to the land which I will show you. And I will make you a great nation. I will bless you and make your name great. And so you shall be a blessing. And I will bless those who bless you. And the one who curses you, I will curse. And in you, all the families of the earth will be blessed." Now this is stated kind of the same way when you go over to Genesis chapter 15. It's reaffirmed to Abram or Abraham what the promises were going to be. And we generally divide that up into three sections, right? Or into three basic promises. He made him a promise concerning land. He made him a promise concerning the nation that he would beget. And he made him a promise concerning the seed who would come from him that would bless all the people. This is the nucleus, or at least the beginning of the people of God. You know that when Abram got over into the land that God had promised, he never really owned anything there, right? He got there and he ended up having the son that God had promised him, but it wasn't a big explosion right away of offspring. He had this son who had sons himself, and one of those sons would end up fathering the 12 who would become the 12 tribes of Israel. But you remember that for those guys, there was a famine in the land. They headed down to Egypt to get some food. Their brother, who they had sold into slavery, was there, Joseph, and he invited them to stay with him, and they enjoyed some privileges in Egypt for a while. But the beginning of Exodus says that there arose a king in Egypt who didn't know Joseph, right? Some time had gone by, and they saw the mere numbers of Joseph's brethren and all his relatives, and thought, we need to do something about this. So they enslaved them. And they were slaves in a foreign land for centuries. And there was one point where God had heard them. God hadn't forgotten them, but he was unveiling his plan for them in his own time. Go with me to Exodus chapter 1, or Exodus chapter, let's go to Exodus 2. In Exodus chapter 2, Let's look at verse 24. It says, actually in verse 23, about halfway through there, it says, the sons of Israel sighed because of the bondage, and they cried out. And their cry for help because of their bondage rose up to God. So God heard their groaning, and God remembered his covenant with Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. And God saw the sons of Israel, and God took notice of them. Over in chapter 3 and verse 7, it says, Yahweh said, I have surely seen the affliction of my people who were in Egypt, and have given heed to their cry because of their taskmasters, for I'm aware of their sufferings. So I've come down to deliver them from the power of the Egyptians, and to bring them up from that land to a good and spacious land, to a land flowing with milk and honey, to the place of the Canaanite, and the Hittite, and the Amorite, and the Perizzite, and the Hivite, and the Jebusite. Of course, these are the nations that they were going to have to drive out once they got there, but God says, I haven't forgotten any of this. I know what I said to your ancestors, and I'm going to fulfill those promises. And then you read through the following pages of Exodus, and that's exactly what happened. You see that God did that. He led them out of Egypt and brought them in a roundabout way into the promised land. But while they were out there, they weren't a nation yet. Oh, they were a people, but they weren't a nation. They needed something to bind them together. And what God decided would bind them together as a special distinction that would make them his people would be this law that he would give to them. Anybody know where he gave them the law? Yes. This is the traditional place where Mount Sinai is. I don't know, you ever seen that old movie, The Ten Commandments? Charlton Heston goes up on the mountain, you know, and God gives him these tablets and stuff, and it's theatrical enough to watch it on the screen. What an event, though, that must have been for God to speak to you, for God to say, I'm going to give my people this law, and I'm going to make it in such a way that they will be distinct because of this law. And so he did. Not just the 10 we're going to be studying in this class, but 613 or so all together that would form for them the basis of their morality, the basis of their government, the basis of their interaction with one another. Everything that God had given to them in this law, he did so that they would have something that would bind them together as his people. It would be their distinguishing characteristic. In fact, go with me to Deuteronomy chapter 4. Deuteronomy 4. Deuteronomy 4. And let's read verses 7 and 8. Deuteronomy 4, verses 7 and 8. Of course, Deuteronomy is the book where it's a series of speeches that Moses gives to the Israelites as they are on the brink of entering the promised land after 40 years in the wilderness. Moses knows he's not going in with them, but he wants to remind them of a couple of different things. One is that God loves you. You read through the book of Deuteronomy, and Moses sprinkles that all through that book. He reminds them that God loved them. Loved them enough to give them something that would govern every aspect of their lives, the law that he had given. Let's read Deuteronomy 4, 7 and 8. Brother Hand, would you read that? Are you there? Okay, so let's ask those questions. What other nations had a law like this? Well, there were other nations, and other nations had laws, right? But what makes the law that God gave to the Israelites distinctive? Pardon me? They're God. They're God. There wasn't anybody else that had the law delivered to them like they did, and had laws that were gracious and for the betterment of the people. And he wanted them to know that this was going to be a sign between him and them. That's important. When somebody talks to you about obeying the Ten Commandments, because we're going to ask that question throughout this series as we go, are the Ten Commandments for us today? First thing we need to realize is that this was a special sign or a distinction for the Israelites that God had given to them to mark them as his special possession. In fact, go over to Exodus 19, verse 5. He speaks to the Israelites gathered there. And Moses says, if you will indeed obey my voice and keep my covenant, then you shall be my own possession among all the peoples. In Deuteronomy 5, he says, Yahweh did not make this covenant with our fathers, but with us. So Moses is making the point that this is for us. This is for us as a people. And that's going to be important if you speak to somebody who insists that we need to especially obey one distinct commandment. And we'll save that for when we get to it. But go with me for a moment. Look at a couple of passages. If you're in your workbook, we're on page 2. And there's the question that I want to answer, but I want to look at these two passages first. Question number 1. How did God want Israel to regard Him and His law? First, go over to Exodus chapter 19. Exodus 19. And let's read verse 8. Exodus 19 and verse 8. Cheryl, my darling wife, are you there? Okay. What did they promise to do? Obey, right? Obey. That's purpose of law, right? You give law so that it will be followed. So God wanted them to view His law obediently. Look over at chapter 20. Chapter 20. And let's look at verses 18 and 19. 18 and 19 of chapter 20. Jason, are you there? Yeah. What was it with all those lightning flashes and all the stuff that's going on? What did God want them to learn from that? He was powerful. Holy. He's holy. He's serious. He's in control. Okay. All of those things are true and correct, right? And when you're dealing with someone who obviously is mightier than you, who is holier than you and calls you to the holiness of Himself, who is in absolute and complete control, that's somebody you want to revere, right? So God wants them to be obedient and He wants them to be reverent, right? Because this was a law that was going to tie everything together for them. Over in Exodus chapter 20 is where we have the first first speaking of Moses of what the law or the Ten Commandments are. You find them again in Deuteronomy chapter 5. Moses brings it up again some 40 years later. But it's interesting. We call them the Ten Commandments, right? The Hebrews call them the Ten Words because of what's said at the very beginning in verse 1. God spoke all these words, right? And later on He calls them commandments, but they call them the Ten Words. And that tells us something about maybe when, remember the old thing, when E.F. Hutton speaks, people listen. But when God speaks, He wanted them to listen. He wanted them to listen and obey. And so His Word is powerful. I said before that the law of Moses contain not just these Ten Commandments, but some 613 laws that just touched every aspect of the Israelites' life. But they boil down to two important things. You look about halfway through that second paragraph on page 2. It says, they boil down to two important characteristics. One, their relationship with God, and their relationship with one another. Now, remember when the guy came to Jesus and asked them, what's the foremost law? What did Jesus say? With all your heart, soul, mind, and strength, like we were talking about that Sunday morning, Zane reminded us, you love God with your entire being, with everything that you are, right? And what's the second one? Love your neighbor as yourself. When you read through all the laws that God had given His people, they deal with those two characteristics. Now, I know they're very broad, but they're very boiled down in these Ten Commandments. And Jesus said, it's on these two characteristics of the law that hang all the law and the prophets. What did the prophets come and tell people that they were supposed to do? Obey the law, right? Come back to God. Do what He says. He reminded them again and again and again how, not only how far they strayed, but that there was always a way back, right? And it tells you something about the graciousness of God. I've been reading through, right now, in my Old Testament reading, I'm reading through Isaiah. And, Isaiah, man, that guy just kept telling them, God's about to be fed up with you. You really need to change, and you need to change now, right? And of course, you know the rest of that story. The people didn't do what he said. And the sad thing is that when God finally had enough, the people got kicked out of the land that they had been promised that they could prosper in. And then later on, when they finally got the opportunity to come back into the land, they did it again. They disobeyed. So you had later prophets like Haggai. You had later prophets like Zechariah, Malachi. These guys who were telling people the same thing that prophets centuries before had told them, and they wouldn't listen. So they've got this law now. They're a fledgling nation, and they're ready to be, or at least they're on the brink of really being God's people. So let's talk about this law that He had given to them. Let's read it in chapter 20. And we're going to read the first 17 verses, and we'll just have somebody take all of that. Trish, would you want to read that for us? Exodus 20, 1 through 17. Of course, this is just the tip of the iceberg of all the laws that God had given to the Israelites. Well, let me ask you this question. Why is law so important to God? I mean, He keeps hammering at them, do what I say, obey my commandments. Why is law so important to God? Okay, why? I mean, that's why you give law, so people will obey, right? Okay. So then, does the giving of law show God's graciousness or tyranny? It's love, right? Could they obey the laws that God had given to them? Of course they could, right? That's why He gave them, because they were completely doable. So then, why should law be important to the Israelites? Even to us today? Okay. That's what John had read for us. What nation is it that has a law like this that has been given to us by our God, right? I think that as we read at least the beginning of these Ten Commandments, that this law reveals the nature of the God of the covenant. What do the first few commandments tell us about God? Okay? He wants them for Himself, right? We had looked at Exodus, or Deuteronomy, where God says, "You are my special possession," right? You belong to me. Okay. What else does it tell us about God? He wants all their devotion. Why? Because He's a megalomaniac? He deserves it, right? He deserves every bit of devotion that they could give to Him. He's our Creator. Okay? He owns us, right? He made us. He has the right to call the shots. So God is reminding them of their purpose by reminding them of who He is, right? He's a God of holiness. He's a God of majesty. He's a God who deserves to call the shots because He is the omnipotent supreme one. He's the one who is a God of justice, of sovereignty. You can go on and on and on and make all these wonderful adjectives concerning the nature and characteristic of God, but the bottom line is what He says at the very beginning. I am Yahweh, your God. I am your God. Then He goes on to say, there's nobody else. You can't have any other gods because I'm the only one. And then He goes on to deliver this law. I think that God delivering law to His people helps us have a proper perspective and view of God. Right? I mean, remember when we were talking about in our class on authority that went on forever? We talked about how not only does God have the right to give authority, but because He has the only right to bestow it, we have the responsibility to obey it, right? So God says a lot just in giving the law about who He is and who His people are. Second, the law defines the people of the covenant. When in the second part from commandment number 5 and on, God told them about how they were going to interact with one another, but it was all based on who they knew He was, right? I mean, the first 4 commandments are all about Him. They're all about regarding Him and realizing who He is. And then He gets to how they interact with one another, but all of that is based on who He is, right? So, if they're people of the covenant, how did this law make them different? They knew that that their God was different than everybody else. How did it make them different, Mike? Okay. So, let's think about what Mike said. So, their God is a righteous God, right? He's calling His people to be righteous, so they have a connection to Him, right? And Mike just called it fellowship. Remember what we said fellowship is? Is it a potluck in the church basement? Well, we don't have a basement, but what is fellowship? What is biblical fellowship? Okay, participation in spiritual things. Were they participating with God in spiritual things through this law? Yeah, you bet they were. They were learning to be the people that God intended them to be. And finally, third, the law defines the area within which God's people will be blessed. In Deuteronomy, let's just turn there, Deuteronomy chapter 28, we're going to read some of that in a minute. But when they got there, when they got to the plains of Moab and they were fixing to head in, of course, God had told Moses He wasn't going to enter with them. And then He gives Moses instructions about what they were supposed to do. Once they did cross over into the land, they were supposed to stand on these two hills. They're called mountains in the Bible, but they're low hills. And there's this narrow valley between them. And some were supposed to stand on one hill and others were supposed to stand on the other hill, the hills of blessing and cursing. And they were supposed to just shout out what God's intention was for them. And the idea of that apparently was to get them to realize that now as they were entering into the land, they were to be obedient to the max to God's intention, to God's law. Over in Deuteronomy chapter 28, look at verse 1. Through Moses, God said, "Now it shall be, if you diligently obey Yahweh your God, being careful to do all His commandments which I command you today, Yahweh your God will set you high above all the nations of the earth. All these blessings will come upon you and overtake you if you obey Yahweh your God." So there's always an if, right? I mean, God's blessings are gracious and they're good and they're benevolent, but there's always an if, right? There's always a condition. And the condition is what? To obey. We're going to keep coming back to that word again and again and again because it's the one thing that God wanted from His people most of all. So Moses says, look, if you just do what God says, God's going to bless your sandals off. You're going to have all this prosperity. Did they? Yeah, they did, right? The land flowing with milk and honey. When they went in there and when they were obedient to God, God made it fertile for them. They prospered. They had a good life. In fact, when they first went in the book of Joshua, God kept telling Joshua, "Be strong and courageous. Don't fear them. The Lord God is with you wherever you go," right? We sing a song about it. They go into the land and they sweep through. They go up north and they come down south and they just sweep through the land. And they did what God said. Now, they didn't do it perfectly, because you read through some of the book of Judges and it reminds you that, well, there were some people that they didn't completely drive out. And, you know, God said, if you don't do this, it's going to come back and bite you. And it did. But they were obedient enough, apparently, at least to God, that He blessed them when they went into the land. But, and that's a big but, because here in Deuteronomy chapter 28, Moses reminds them that if you don't obey God, it's not going to go well. Look at verse 15. Deuteronomy 28, verse 15. But it shall come about, if you do not obey Yahweh your God, to observe to do all His commandments and His statutes, with which I charge you today, all these curses will come upon you and overtake you. And then he goes through this litany of curses. Cursed you will be in the city, cursed in the country, cursed will be your basket and your kneading bowl. He goes on and on and on in verse 22. He says, God will smite you with consumption and with fever. It's not just that the land is going to be cursed. You're going to be cursed. You're going to undergo physical difficulties because of your obedience. He says they'll go through famine in verse 23. The heaven which is over your head shall be bronze, and the earth which is under you iron. The Lord will make the rain of your land powder and dust. From heaven it shall come down on you until you are destroyed. Did God ever bring famine like that upon the land? Can you think of a specific time? Remember Elijah, the prophet? I'm sorry, Lord. That's it. What, we didn't get any rain here for about 2 months, and it was horrible, right? Can you imagine if it didn't rain for 3 years? It wasn't just because they had a really bad year of El Nino. It was because God brought upon this curse because of their disobedience to Him. So, the commands that God gave, they provide the parameters within which God says, I will bless you. You go outside those parameters, and it won't end well for you. If you look on page 3 of your handout, of your booklet, under the third point there, about halfway down in that third paragraph, it says, so God gave laws to His people, which made it clear that the blessings of the covenant were related to the way their lives were to be lived. The path of obedience was a path of covenant blessing. The path of disobedience was a path on which blessings would be forfeited. And this isn't the only time that God says this kind of thing. He says it over and over and over and over again. So, we're going to, for a quick minute, see if we can remember what these commands are. What's the first one? And you can look in your Bible if you want. Okay. No other gods. That's the first one, right? That's the first one that God starts off with. Why is that one such a biggie? Because He's the only one. Okay. What's the second one? Okay. No idols. No images. Okay. What's the third one? Don't take God's name in vain. There's a lot more to that commandment than, you know, I remember when I was a kid, my mom would tell me, don't cuss, don't take God's name in vain, right? There's a lot more to it than that. We'll talk about that when we get to that commandment. What's the fourth one? Okay. That's a sticky one, because there are still people today who, well, let me back up. What is the Sabbath day? What day of the week is it? Saturday. Right? So if you're an Israelite kid in the wilderness, you couldn't watch cartoons on Saturday, right? Because you had to observe the Sabbath day. Right? There are folks today who are still trying to enforce that instead of the Lord's Day on Sunday. And there's a lot to that, and we'll talk about that. What's the fifth one? Okay. Now, the emphasis starts to shift, right? It's still based on the first ones, but now it goes more outward, more horizontal. What's the sixth one? Seventh one? No adultery. What's the eighth one? Do not steal. Nine? No false witness. Okay. And the tenth one? Don't covet, right? We don't use that word much, covet. But it's a good word. It means it's a significant Bible word. And it's important for us to know what that is. And of course, we're going to cover that as well. So, these are 10 laws that God gave, along with a whole bunch of other laws, to His people. Are they binding for us today? Somebody does this, somebody else does this, and somebody goes, was that the first bell or the second bell? First, okay. I guess the answer is yes and no. Because they're reaffirmed for us in the New Testament. Somebody mentioned that. Even the fourth one, right? That's the one we say, well, the nine of them are reaffirmed for us in the New Testament, except for the Sabbath day. But there's some significance about the Sabbath day that's good for Christians too. And we'll spend some time on that. Originally, I was going to do two lessons on the Sabbath because there's so much to it. I didn't do that. You've got two classes in your, if you look at the table of contents in your workbook for the Sabbath day, but we're not probably going to do that, although it may have turned into two classes anyway. I don't know. We'll see when we get there. There's a lot of significance to this. It's significant that not only did Jesus reaffirm these, but also, of course, the apostles who spoke with the authority of Jesus. They're affirmed for us in lots of different places. Some of those you have at the bottom of page 4 on your handout. Now, Jesus got into some trouble with people who thought he was trying to do away with the law of Moses. And in Matthew 5, verse 17, Jesus says, I didn't come to abolish the law, but what? But to fulfill. Okay, so how did he do that? How did Jesus fulfill the law? Okay, he kept it, right? Okay. So, he's a great example of obedience to God. Was there anything in the law? Remember, it's not just the 10, it's the whole law. Was there anything in the law that looked forward to Jesus coming? Yeah, just about everything. So Jesus literally fulfilled the predictions, the promise of the law, right? He fulfilled the prophecies of the law, the broad law. But I want you to turn real quick to Romans chapter 10. Romans chapter 10. And we're going to end on this. Romans chapter 10. And look with me in let's read verses 1 through 4. Romans 10, 1 through 4. Paul's talking about his heartbrokenness about his fellow Israelites' refusal to accept Jesus. He says, my heart's desire and my prayer to God for them is for their salvation. For I testify about them that they have a zeal for God, but not in accordance with knowledge. For not knowing about God's righteousness and seeking to establish their own, they did not subject themselves to the righteousness of God. For Christ is the end of the law for righteousness to everyone who believes. Now verse 4. We've only got about a minute. Verse 4. What does that mean? What does it mean that Christ is the end of the law? Okay, he's the fulfillment of it. Is Christ also the stopping point of the law? Yeah, what does Colossians 2 tell us? That when Jesus was nailed to the cross, so was the law, right? Colossians 2, verses 14 through 17. Okay, So not only did the law stop, he was the literal end of the law, but he was the end as far as the goal. Jason said he fulfilled it. He was the aim. He was everything that the law looked toward. In fact, over in Galatians 3, it tells us that Jesus is the law was like a tutor. It was like a vehicle that carried us to Christ, right? So when we read through all these laws, I want you to, in the back of your head, think, Jesus is in there somewhere. This is bringing me closer to Jesus somehow. Comments? Questions? No? Okay. I appreciate your help. Thank you.